Isaac, are you connected? Can you hear us?
I'm here, yep. Can you hear me?
Great. Yeah, yeah. Good. Well, let's go ahead and get started, and thanks everybody for being on this morning, the day after a long weekend. Hopefully you got a little bit of a rest. Our agenda is in front of us, and we've got probably just a few things to cover this morning. Isaac, before I ask Michael to give kind of an update on a few things, anything you wanted to flag or take away from this last week, things you're thinking?
Nope, the agenda looks good. I don't think we have a report out from lunch last portfolio committee yet on the agenda, but we can, yeah, try to pull that together for next week. But, yeah, no, take it away. I think the agenda looks good otherwise.
Great. Michael, it sounds like other groups have been busy, including one who's put together something of a template for expanding on some of the action items. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that looks like and anything we need to know or be thinking?
Again, and just before we go there, I know you started to announce people that were called in, but we might just want to go through, just for the audio recording, who's on.
Sure. And I figure it's just a lot of new faces or names. So, go ahead, welcome everybody. I do see, for the record, Jessica Broker, Melanie Lucas-Conwell, Miriam Pease introduced herself earlier, and Tanya Jimmy are all, I think, newcomers to the group, or at least we haven't had a chance to recognize them, their attendance before.
Great. And then on the call for Michael Baker, Mark Lukin, Karen McGilvery, Michael Yaffe, myself, and then for AEA, it looks like Karen Bell. I'm not sure if she was announced. I think that's everyone.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
actually,
Katie Conway from the Dallas Commission, too. Thanks,
okay, Katie. Sorry.
No.
Sorry for missing you.
No, it was my fault. I just introduced new people, and she's been a longstanding participant. So, sorry.
Not a problem. And then, just going through this too, I know Isaac, you referenced at the last task force meeting kind of liking the way that the data subcommittee kind of organized, and I'm pulling it up now. I have the kind of the actions from this subcommittee, but the energy subcommittee kind of created high level categories and identified almost sub actions underneath that. I just wanted to pause there and kind of talk about that, because at one of the first presentations I did for the task force in July was kind of we showed a kind of proposed layout for the plan. And it was a similar approach where you could have a high level strategy and then kind of sub actions underneath that. It may make the final deliverable a little easier if we consider, you know, creating these higher level kind of categories. And the reason that, yeah, I wasn't trying to drive us to these high level categories when we were identifying actions, because I didn't want to limit ourselves. But as we're getting closer, you know, towards the end, and since you brought it up at the task force meeting, it might be good to consider, you know, organizing it in this way. And, you know, I introduced high level definitions of strategies, actions. That's completely flexible, and we can discuss that at the task force level. I know other members may have a military background, so tactical and strategic actions might take on different meanings for different people. But just wanted to pause there. Neil, as you mentioned, the Coastal Committee, particularly Duff, went through, and he actually, and we can share this. I think I shared it with the co-chairs, but we can share it with the rest of the committee. Duff put together a first pass for the Coastal Committee, one of their actions, you know, as you're writing the executive summary, what are some of the things that you might want to consider? And he fully knows he went, you know, a little in the weeds on this just because he has the knowledge. He spent a couple hours drafting this for one action. So if we do this for multiple actions, creating those high-level categories might be to our benefit to streamline this. But let me just run through what he prepared. And this is something that will have to be discussed at a higher level at the task force, whether this is a template we would want to, you know, pursue. But I just wanted to first kind of just socialize it with the subcommittees that are meeting this week, just because it was prepared. So at a high level, task and purpose of the action item, just a simple description, the background of the reason for the action, the value proposition, and then how we get there. And then, so Duff really, you know, laid in detail, you know, the kind of intermediate steps of how to actually implement this action. I don't think we need this high level of detail unless, one, we already have the research, the due diligence is done. If it's an action that's already kind of on its way to implementation, we have this information. Because this is a long-range plan, it's okay if we don't, in my opinion, we don't have this level of information for all of the actions. Some of the higher priority ones, we might have this, so that's okay to include it. And in no way am I implying we should limit how much information we include. I just don't want to set the bar that we need this for every action. And then he has implementation timeline and then expected results. So I just want to pause here, you know, in terms of those high-level categories and recognizing for this action, Duff wrote 2 pages. I think for the purposes of this plan, you know, it's an executive level report. We may not need all this detail. If that detail exists, we're happy to include it in the plan or even an appendix to the plan for supporting documentation. But when we do prepare this plan, you know, given the timeline that we kind of need something, a draft within the next month, I think a high-level executive summary where we have a high-level kind of category of the strategy and then actions underneath that would suffice. And this is something we're socializing, too, with, you know, Clay and Curtis. So I just want to pause there for any reactions.
Yeah, I can just reiterate what I said during the meeting, which is it makes sense. To me, and I see now that you're behind the scenes leading us through this all the way along, Mike. I had forgotten this initial presentation that you made. But yeah, it's a nice way to organize information, and I think we'll, especially for our group that has so many actions that we created, it'll help us winnow those down into a set of strategies with actions underneath them that are easier to wrap our heads around. So I'll just reiterate that I like that format. I don't know what Mills or others think.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think we've been not complaining for a few weeks, but like trying to get to, like, here's what we want. Like, we want more words attached to this brainstorming, and I feel like this helps us coalesce the thinking that has taken place so far. It'll help with prioritization so we can see everything, like we can bundle and then see all the different potential actions highlighted within each bundle or strategy. So I appreciate that. I know in the action worksheet, at one point we got into a lot more detail about who's doing what and all that. Is that still something you want to see reflected in those write-ups, this will be the state's plan, so I don't know how much beyond the state we want to be directive or suggestive, but do you have any thoughts on that, Michael?
Well, I guess, can you clarify when you say, so this spreadsheet I have open, we definitely consolidated. There's more columns and fields that we have listed. We do want to fill those out, but they kind of align with the categories that Duff suggested anyway. So it's more of just like getting the nomenclature of what we all agree on to call these categories.
So including lead organization, the partners and collaborators, you're hoping to include that in your write-ups?
Yes.
Perfect. Great.
So, and go ahead. I envision the spreadsheet, the tracking sheet, that becomes part of the plan in either, you know, an appendix or an implementation agenda. So.
Yeah. Great. Anything else that's taken place over the last week or since we last met with a large group that we should be thinking about?
So let me pull back up the agenda. I know Isaac Penny kind of shared the climate exchange site with the statutes and regulations subcommittee. They're meeting today, and I believe they're teeing up to have Gary be a tentative guest speaker today. I think he just confirmed and sent some information, but he's going to be discussing, you know, PSC or PCE and then King Cove kind of issues. So, you know, that should be happening later today. And the other thing I just wanted to share informally, we discussed kind of prioritization of these actions. And I know at the task force meeting, I kind of gave high level kind of, you know, the four categories we can consider. For the purposes of this plan, just to, we're kind of looking at different exercises we can do at the next task force meeting. And the next task force meeting is going to be an all day meeting. So we may have breakout sessions again. To kind of be of the most value, we're looking at exercises to look at prioritization. And I do want to just informally share and just get some feedback on this meeting. I have it open. This is from a different type of plan, but it's just from a planning exercise. This is actually from a New Jersey plan. It's a state hazard mitigation plan that we work with the Board of Public Utilities. You may see some energy kind of references here. Apologize about that. And all this does is this creates categories that you may be considering of how to prioritize an action. And I'm not recommending these individual categories, but the exercise overall just uses zeros and ones. If it advances this priority area, code it as a one. If it doesn't, code it as a zero, and then add up the columns. Whoever has the higher number would have a higher priority. So just to give an example, you know, the categories could be the goals of the task force, whether it be affordability, reliability, energy resilience. Other categories can be it aligns with the region's priority of, you know, coastal, rail belt, or rural. Another category could be it leads to kind of immediate implementation for, you know, statute or regulations, because we know it's a goal of this task force is to identify those early actions for the state legislature. Another, you know, category could be if it's a action that's kind of, you know, a keystone action or an action that you're going to need to implement another kind of strategic action. You know, that could be coded as a value. So this is one way of just keeping it high level without having the data or metrics behind each action to understand, you know, some economic metrics like the return on investment, or we may not know the modeling at this stage to understand how much it's going to reduce energy costs. So this is just high level exercise that we can implement quickly across multiple subcommittees and actions. Wanted some feedback versus on this exercise that we might be considering for the next task force meeting.
Isaac, that sounds, I know we've kind of gone back and forth around prioritization, but does this scoring methodology help us in determining what? Maybe it's more like a feasibility or other type of kind of goal for that effort.
Yeah, it seems like a good structure to me. I think we can use this. I guess the interesting conversation will be around what we list as the categories and what we value and what we think needs to go into those categories. But yeah, I think this is a good structure. Thank you, Michael, for providing these tools. Yeah.
Okay.
But just thinking, I mean, all the ones that we have suggested fit all of our goals. So if we end up with 10 for each one, then it's going to be really hard to prioritize. So we might have to think about, are there additional, you know, layers of analysis that we could include?
Or even weighing in on do we prioritize things that are near term versus long term, or, clean, you know, or yeah, some of this social. I think you could actually get into some differentiation based on some of those criteria. But yeah, we should look at establishing those criteria in a way that actually has some meaningful prioritization results.
Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to Clay or Curtis, about this. We usually have check-in calls on Mondays and Thursdays, and yesterday was a holiday, but I mean, we might even consider doing another kind of online survey to get feedback on the different categories to prioritize, to help advance the conversation before the next task force meeting with all the subcommittees.
Yeah,
it seems like we may want to get, if all the subcommittees are using this, we may want to get on the same page as a task force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's where I think you're going, Michael.
Yeah, it's in the absence of another task force meeting, I think we may have to use these online surveys.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Oh, it'd be interesting. We've got the four goals for the task force that you kind of laid out. It'd be interesting, like, for actions, like, just prioritize, like, relative to one goal, like, how that would sort, and then do that for each, and then in the middle have, like, ones, like, overlapping. It's almost like a Venn diagram or scatter plot of some sort, in my mind. And that, rather than trying to get, you know, things that fit everything, which, you know, might be too much, you provide folks like a suite of options. Like if we really want to make a difference on affordability, here's the ones, and we would sacrifice some of these other things. Or if we wanted a just transition or clean, like we would focus on these things. So give people ways to think about, how to prioritize relative to each of the goals, versus trying to do all of it or trying to meet all the goals at once. But then you do have different categories, short, long-term, feasibility, availability of resource, to actually do something, that might give you other lenses to examine each of these actions or strategies.
Yeah, and one thing that, Clay and Curtis, they're okay with, because this came up on a previous call with Coastal, is, you know, and when you think about prioritization or details of these actions, we may not have the complete data or metrics behind them yet, but we're okay if the task force members use their kind of industry expertise and wisdom to make certain assumptions at this point, because that's why you've been identified as members of the task force.
Cool.
So I know it's probably been a week since we last spoke, but those have been the updates.
Okay. Well, we met as a full group last week, right? Didn't
mm-hmm.
we?
Yeah.
It seemed like when we went through as a full group all the different actions that were out there, it seemed like some of the groups were maybe surprised by what they were hearing or looking at. Have we been more active than others in reviewing ours, or and that's not a fair question, maybe, but maybe the it gets to a question of there's probably a lot of duplication overlap, like how do we fit all the pieces together? Like, is that part of a future large group effort? Or is each group going to be tasked with kind of reflecting on theirs relative to what other groups have done?
So, I mean, I can just tell you that the different subcommittees have been meeting at different intervals. I think you're right in the sweet spot. The data subcommittee, the reason, you know, they're so far well along is they had a two-day tactical working session. So they dedicated two whole days just to meeting in person and going through this. Yeah, the rail belt, they were a little surprised by some of the actions, but because they had the ribbon cutting, they were canceling their meetings. So they haven't been meeting as frequently. So what their solution is, they want to meet in person on the 14th at AEA and get caught up. So, Coastal Subcommittee is interested in having a half day session, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen. They threw that out at the last meeting. I think this subcommittee, you're right in the sweet spot. Like you may not need to meet for a half day or a whole day. But keeping you in the loop of these kind of updates is critical as we advance this.
Well, and that's how we designed this, Isaac, right, is to be in the sweet spot. So we're right on par with our expectations.
So, yeah, I agree. Having said that, I know everyone's schedules are busy, but it may be worth, just given the timeline that we're on, I hate to even propose it, Nils, but it may be worth getting together for a little bit more of an intensive half day on the subcommittee level just to go over everything with a fine-tooth comb and dollarizing processes, and I feel like there may be some things that are left out, but if we get together and just stare at it for a few hours, we may want to include some things also. So, I'd be open to that. Otherwise, if we don't do that, have some dedicated time, other priorities get in the way, and I find there's going to be some things that we leave out. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind, in the interest of hygiene, spending a few intensive hours just at the subcommittee level to work on this.
Yeah. It feels like we've got a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And probably more stuff that we can add, and I'll suggest a few things a little bit later. But I want to make sure it's meaningful and right and has backup and matches up and, you know, makes sense overall. So I feel like that's the level of thinking we haven't been able to do. Like, we can generate on these kind of one-off meetings, but actually spend some time together deliberating would be good.
So just to remind you of the upcoming dates, the task force meeting is the 19th. The Rail Belt, they're meeting full day on the 14th. The next scheduled subcommittee meeting for this group is Monday the 11th. And then I know there was some potential meeting conflicts we wanted to discuss on the calendar.
Yeah, so to be clear, I'm in D.C. that whole week of the 25th, and in particular traveling on that Monday, so I could do something, you know, after 1 p.m. on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday that week and just call in virtually. I think most of my stuff will be done by 5 or so Eastern time. Or we could skip that week and then do a longer session the week after. Like do a 3 or 4 hour session the week after to kind of catch up and be in person, be one idea. I can't remember what the conflict was on October 9th.
I believe it's a holiday.
Oh, right. Okay. Just looking at calendars here.
So we can figure that out. Maybe we can do some work and then figure out what we want to schedule around.
Okay.
The
reason I was bringing that up, too, is just to navigate if you wanted to have that half-day session, would you want to have it before the next task force meeting?
Potentially. Isaac, could you do the 14th for a few hours that morning of September?
Yeah, I could. I have a thing that our team is putting on at the lakefront that day, but I don't actually really need to be there. So the 14th, I'm wide open on the 15th, just throwing that out there, but if you're only opening the 14th, I could make that work.
I could do the 15th from noon to 2.
Sure. Yeah, that's wide open for me.
And Michael, what I'm thinking is if, you know, today I think we're probably, I had a couple more topics to build up or to add to our actions worksheet. And then between now and Monday, you know, we could start drafting some of those strategy pieces, documents, and then confer a little bit on the 11th if we have some time, and then on Friday the 15th we could spend, do a deeper dive into those and make sure they all make sense and see what else is missing. So basically by the 15th we would want to have, you know, pretty good concurrence with the drafts that we were looking at, so that we could, if they were presented to the full group on the 19th, we would be prepared to back those up. Does that sound all right?
That sounds right to me, and I just want to confirm with my colleagues on the call that schedule.
It works.
Okay.
Sorry, say the date again. I apologize.
Well, Mark, you're not invited.
Okay, no worries.
You can come. It was the 15th. Sorry, noon two.
Yeah, we'll make it work.
Niels, did you want to, I have the action sheet up. I know last time you kind of drove. Do you want to do that again?
I spent some time thinking about other stuff that's out there, and wanted to throw out a few things that maybe could get added. Part of what we've struggled with over the past few weeks is that, you know, it's one thing, I mean, for any of the actions that are out there to say fund clean energy or invest in wind or, you know, pick a thing to spend money on. But, I mean, part of the challenge is there's not money. And so we've wanted to spend, I think, I don't know if it's our job to figure out where the money comes from. It feels like when it, especially for incentives and subsidies, it's at least relevant. And so I've been thinking more about that. We've talked, and I don't know that it has ended up on an action worksheet yet, but we talked about the postage stamp concept, and in that scenario, where the money comes from is from other ratepayers, right? That basically you're pooling rates across the state in some way, and those who are paying lower right now pay a little bit more, and those who pay really high right now pay a lot less. But we would need some modeling and math to figure out what exactly the impact would be. But I wanted to make sure that ends up at least as a concept on a worksheet somewhere. And kind of to tie back to my original premise, like where does money come from? Like at least with that one, we know who bears that cost. It's not a state subsidy, though the state could offset some of that potentially. But it's a other ratepayers who are funding that. Another source of funding, I want to throw this out there just for fun, because I feel like this is what we're talking about. The state has in high cash years or in high need years has carved out a portion of the PFD to be an energy dividend. And, you know, it's not crazy, I think, to say, you know, instead of that energy dividend going to everybody and including those who, you know, may not, you know, need it as much as, you know, the next community over or those with higher rates, could an energy dividend, you know, be carved out and applied to in investments or subsidies or, and I think incentives in particular. Could an energy dividend go to projects that lower costs and make a difference in the long term versus a subsidy in the short, and especially a subsidy that's not tied at all to not merit criteria, it's need. There's another term for it, but I'm not thinking about it. So I think an energy dividend at the project level is worth adding to our worksheet. I've got maybe just two more. I want to make sure that we're leveraging our debt capacity as a state effectively. And so I don't know what our debt burden is right now or what our debt capacity might be. Probably right now is not the time to borrow, but a year and a half ago, it was. So I think adding and kind of exploring our debt capacity, debt burden, and the ability to deploy debt for projects that align with the goals of this task force kind of ends up on our list or could be on this list. We have Alaska as a resource development state. We've got a number of oil and gas projects, mineral development, carbon offset projects now. And there has been, something of a trend in the legislature to add in kind of a carve out within some of those new programs where a portion of the revenues come out and go to renewable energy or affordable energy type projects. So we could be looking at that mechanism for funding some of these things. And really transferring a non-renewable resource into a renewable resource, or at least a resource that is directly impacting and benefiting Alaska communities. So those, I don't know if I ended up with four, and Isaac here, stat assistant will help me capture those, maybe, but, I don't know. It feels like funding for all these things is an important component of what we're talking about. So Isaac, did that, the name of our group is not funding energy projects, but how do you feel about talking about funding, and do any of those sound too crazy?
On big side, they don't sound too crazy. I do think they're relevant to our group, because if we can come up with ways to bring down project costs or to have public dollars available to match private dollars or to participate in projects, that is a form of incentive and subsidy. Write them down, or we'll have my AI assistant tell us what you said and put some additional actions in here to score. I think those are interesting, Mills. Also curious if anyone on the call has actions to suggest or things that they would suggest, I'd be open to hearing that too. Maybe folks can raise their hand if they have anything that they want to add. One other kind of question that I had following up on some of your ideas, Mills, is has the state, one of the ideas that has come forward is transmission or some sort of HVDC, high voltage direct current transmission line that connects, communities in the state or runs from the North Slope down to Anchorage. And I'm wondering if there's been any effort in the state in the past to do some of the right-of-way work or securing land or doing some of the NEPA processes or getting some of the permitting requirements out of the way for some of the projects that have risen to the top in this group, because those, I don't know, there's examples from other states, Texas being one, where you had a state authority basically step in and said, we're going to establish this corridor and we're going to do all of the environmental and the permitting and all of the land use and right-of-way work, years in advance of projects actually being built, because they had a plan and a vision for where they wanted to build some of their future energy infrastructure and where they wanted some of those transmission lines to go. So I don't know, that was an idea that I wanted to throw out there. In addition to yours, Mills, was the idea of the state doing some of that hard, almost like pre-development work to clear the way in certain areas for developers, private developers there to come in. And that's a way to incentivize, you know, project development and also get ahead of some of the community, some of the community engagements and permits and things that can really delay projects if they're not done until a project is actually moving. So yeah, just wanted to throw that out there as another possible action to consider.
I think it was Mark. On the coastal subcommittee, Duff has already proposed something along those lines where we are leveraging RS-2477 right-of-ways that exist, as well as Safety Lou Act 4077 right-of-ways. Those are primarily down in southeast Alaska in the Tongass, but the idea being, you know, to solidify, I guess, you know, and once you've identified within those right-of-ways which ones make most sense for transmission, distribution, then, you know, you do, I think the intent would be to be more proactive in defining those and getting those right-of-ways on the state books for from the federal government.
Neat, yeah.
So, I'm surprised that nobody's brought up HVDC so far. I think we've talked a little bit about transmission, but 10 years ago, everybody seemed to be talking. Well, Mayor Kohler was talking a lot about HVDC. It still seems like it should be on the list somewhere. And it's, you know, Andrew Guy's been talking about, you know, getting power to, you know, Western Alaska and specifically about transmission. Like, it seems like that would be a thing. Is Duff on all the work groups? He seems to be contributing in lots of different places.
No, that was the coastal.
Yeah. All right. Whatever. Good. The other thing I would note, Isaac, that's Norway's model. When we did a Norway policy tour and looked at their oil and gas development, it's the state who does a lot of that project development, pre-development work. The feasibility, the seismic, surveying, et cetera. And that dramatically changes, the cost involved, for those then private developers who also have, you know, some available, state investment beyond that. So I think there's probably some room there to kind of think about a different way, a different type of incentive or subsidy into a project. Melanie?
Melanie Lucas-Conwell, for the record. I run the Anchorage Sea Pacer program and have been part of the program and statute updates for the past 3 years. I can speak mostly to the rail belt side as it comes to commercial property development. The two key issues that I see are the speed of permitting and the access of permitting. That's mostly a local government challenge. Anchorage is very behind on many of the permits, so that is hindering the speed of commercial property development. I imagine that other of the larger communities are also having that challenge in terms of their permitting process, partly hindered by workforce availability. And the second one that I'll mention, and I know that AEA is already thinking about this, is that the availability of energy auditors, specifically as it relates to this initiative and subcommittee. Energy auditors are in short supply in Alaska, and many project constructions and programs require an energy audit to get off the ground. That is certainly the case for Sea Pacer, and it's the case for many of these other programs and subsidies and rebates that are coming out. And so I know in talking with AEA recently, there are thoughts around how do we increase our energy auditor workforce in Alaska. That is a lot easier done for the rail belt, not as easy for coastal communities flying them out, but that is some thought around that might be helpful to make these projects and subsidies actually materialize.
Melanie, does the state have like energy audit staff that do that, or is it, do they farm it out? Like, could
someone
it be like a state program, shared service?
Everybody used to have an energy auditor curriculum and certification that they used to have, and that used to be what is it, the Solarize program. There was funding, TA technical assistance funding for that. They're talking about that now, and maybe Karen Bell has more thoughts if she's still on the call around what AEA is doing there, but that's what I've been hearing from AEA. It hasn't existed since, and gosh, I have many CPACER projects that are very slow to deploy and happen as a direct result of not being able to find an energy auditor to review their projects.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do it if you need somebody, but
I'll hold you up to that, no.
Yeah. Karen, any thoughts on, I know you've got the Circuit Rider program. Could you have a Circuit Rider energy auditor? Or what does that look like? Do you know?
I'm not quite sure what that would look like, but we are looking into a couple of things right now. We are currently looking for funding to have a statewide administrator for the CPACE program. And there's also some federal funding coming in for energy auditor training and contractor training. And we're working with AHSC with that funding. We haven't quite discussed the commercial side of it, but I do recognize what Melanie is saying, and that is a gap. And we would need to start training and have some sort of curriculum to begin to have more energy auditors in the state. So it is a discussion, but we're pretty much in the preliminary stages right now.
I just maybe flag the NOAA Climate Ready Workforce opportunity, the federal funding opportunity in January, February, I think the applications do. We'll be we'll probably be involved in an application for a larger group, but maybe we can add that, include that in. Something to think about.
Yeah. Oh. Just to kind of build off of this conversation too, and Karen, I know you didn't attend these meetings. It was Connor from AEA. But one of the things on the state energy data was talking about creating a department of AEA to kind of look at data and data tracking. I guess the big question of that is how would that be funded? And I'm not sure if there's a nexus to this subcommittee to kind of discuss that, or if that's something we may have to talk about in the future. So.
Yeah,
I don't think there's funding right now planned for that, but I know Connor hasn't talked about that. I don't know how that would look like going forward, though.
Yeah, if it's coming from the state or if that's incentivized in some way, so.
I just wanted to put a pin in the first comment that Melanie made about permitting for buildings and that being a challenge that slows down a lot of projects. And I think, framing that as streamlining the permitting process at the Muni Planning Division, or, adopting best practices from other munis across the country who have, had online platforms and invested in some technology and invested in some coordinating of inspectors and different departments within the muni. I think there's a lot of efficiency that could be gained through just essentially importing best practices. I think that's an important point, and I heard that a lot from folks. I think Anchorage is actually special along the rail belt because we have essentially adopted the strictest standards from elsewhere in the country, and then we also have earthquakes and we have snow load, and we are a kind of a later municipality, and so we took some of the the latest and greatest from other places. And so it's really hard to build things and to modify buildings in Anchorage. And yeah, I think we could get a long ways by just working, leveraging some technology and some internal operations and efficiencies to push this forward. So I don't know how we frame that as an action, but I just wanted to thank Melanie for bringing that up. I think it's a super important point that should somehow make it into our list here.
Yeah. I think too, if I might just add, Juno has been talking about adopting IECC 2021 energy standards, which will be even stricter than Anchorage, which is 2018. So it might be becoming a bigger issue statewide.
Yeah. What about, could we do like an O-pump for kind of this arena, and that OPUMP is the Office of Whatever Large Permitting Projects at DNR. I think it should be called OPIMP, but they refuse to acknowledge my, but you could do like an AEA type, Office of Permitting Support, for large municipalities with renewable energy or affordable energy projects that help to, and basically it's like line up all the different partners, get them at the same table, figure out a way to streamline the effort. It, something like that could, would be, I think, a good action item. It could be considered either, but anything that the state is paying for is either an incentive or a subsidy to try to get something. So it ends up on our list. We don't have a workforce group, right?
Does your incentive number 6 kind of fit that, or do you need to expand that if you scroll that down?
Yeah, I think we would need to fine-tune this to make it more, I think, to encompass the municipal level, all right? Because we're talking kind of intergovernmental, and this is state level.
Is it crazy?
I'm sorry there. So, yeah, it's just doing that at a new level is what we're talking about.
Is it crazy to, Alaska is an energy state. Energy is one of the three kind of pillars that drives our economy. We don't really have an energy office at the state. Like, we have AEA, which is tucked under ADA, but it's not its own state departments, which, given, who we are as a state and also some of the projects and the importance of energy in the state's economic future, it seems like there should be a Curtis that's in a department.
Commissioner Thayer, is that what we're talking about?
Or a future Curtis, but not tucked under another department, but as its own energy department in the state. Is that a crazy idea? I imagine there's people have strong feelings about such an idea, but it just strikes me rather than OCAMP at the state level for just the Department of Energy.
Just to kind of clarify too, and this is more of a question for everyone that's on the call, I know in other states that requires an amendment to the state constitution to create another department. Is that what we're talking about here?
I think the governor can just do it. He just did it with Department of Health, right?
Well, I would clarify for you, for everybody on the call, AEA is its own entity. They share a board with ADA, but they truly are their own entity and their own authority. They have their own public corporation bylaws recognize that Curtis truly is independent of ADA from a organizational perspective.
Yeah. I do like that this group starts we started up a bunch of ideas with, is it crazy? So this is, this is the sweet spot, you guys. This is how that happens. Free thinkers. Any So we've been generative, at least, in coming up with some additional action items we could add to our worksheet. And now, I guess just before we have to wrap up here at 9 o'clock, anything else that folks would add about either existing actions or topics that have come up, or are we in the right lane or not for any of these?
I think it's a good overview. Mark, really quickly, does Curtis report to the governor, or does Curtis report to the head of ADA?
The governor,
right. He reports directly to the governor. Wow. Okay, yeah. I thought you had reported up to ADA.
He has,
okay.
Yeah, no, obviously, you know, he's under, still under the same board as ADA, right? So they have a, you know, the board of directors, you know, is really guiding, you know, guides ADA and AEA, because of the fact that they are, you know, public corporations, you know, with the mandate to be operating the black. I'm uncertain. I think they are separate from the State Budget Act. I'd have to go back and look at that, similar to the railroad, right? So those are some distinctives that make, I think, both ADA and AEA valuable in that you know, different from a State Department.
It's funny how we think about value. Some value is expressed in being closer to the state and expressed as a department and state level function, and other types of value is keeping distant from the state. And, you know, at different times in our life, you know, as a state, we've swung, in different directions. You know, we've had to have more enterprises like the railroad or AEA or ADA or others, AHFC. And in other times, we've tried to bring things under state government more directly. And I think, you know, part of it is, like, what is in, and I think we'd have to come back to for any of these questions, what is in the public interest, and then what lines up best with the four goals that the task force has established. So we would look at a question like AEA, you know, where does it belong, how does it fit into this, through those goals. Would it achieve the public interest differently as a more or different kind of state agency?
Right.
Just interesting. Stuff to be thinking about. So Isaac, I feel like we've got some drafting, to be thinking about between now and the end of the week. To take maybe, you know, first stab at least organizing these actions into kind of some strategy buckets. Where do they fit together, and then having that conversation next Monday. Isaac, do you have time this week just to take a look at that, and I can do the same, and we can come back together. Just maybe Yoni and take notes and.
That sounds good. We also might want to just set a date here by when we no longer accept new ideas, kind of a cutoff date here. We are creative, and there's a lot of ideas coming forward, but we might just, in the interest of making sure we can get this into a draft form, I don't know, a week out or a couple weeks out, we may want to pause on any new ideas.
I think that makes sense. The 14th is when the Railbelt's having their all-day session, so what comes out of that, that might be a good thing to just circle back with the results of that to see if there's any correlation or nexus to the subcommittee.
Right. Kind of wait through that meeting and maybe the 19th and anything after that. Things will start solidifying, right, after the 19th when the whole group starts working on the rest of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's take a stab at kind of putting these into different buckets, and thinking about, you know, strategy descriptions that encompass the actions under each. And I'll check in with you, Isaac, maybe just via email later in the week and see what happens.
Okay. Did you want to work kind of asynchronously between now and then, Mills?
As opposed to, like, on a shared document? Oh, I'm so bad at it. We could do a shared doc. We could work synchronously.
A shared document would be good. I'm just saying, like, I guess I'm wondering, should we just edit the spreadsheet on share, on the SharePoint, or how do you want actually?
I was thinking more like in a Word, kind of a document format, like the other working group. Like.
Okay.
So
we'll figure it out.
I just, if it's helpful, I unhit a column that says strategy, and then you can actually just enter it in on as it relates to the action, and it could be, there could be multiple within the same, so just keep it one.
End of the game, Isaac. Michael is like, he's always knowing where we're going to land. Oh, I just happen to have this hidden column that's called strategy, and all you have to do is write the strategy there.
Yeah, that's perfect. Do that.
Perfect.
So edit the master file in the SharePoint in a strategy column. Okay.
Yep.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks everybody. Thanks for being on today. And we'll, our next meeting is next Monday, right? The 11th.
Right. 8 a.m.
And, we'll have a chance to review kind of work that's been done on that, on those strategies, and then plan on the 15th, see what else has come from other working, other subcommittees, and then do a deeper dive into those strategy and action, efforts.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye all.
Okay. Bye.